appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. First, the following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. I'm employed as senior biostatistician at LA Care Health Plan, the local initiative health authority of Los Angeles County, California. LA Care is a public entity competing with commercial insurers in the Medicaid and SCHIP markets in LA County. I'll proceed according to the following outline: learning objectives, background on LA Care and CAHPS, and the rational economic model that underlies most incentive programs. The learning objectives relate to those points. Discuss common tools for persuading patients to get well care and preventive care, then describing the practical logistics and costs of deploying those tools, describing proportions of Medicaid members who recall getting incentives or reminders and welcome calls as the reason that they went for checkups, compare which sources, doctors or health plans or employers, were the most prevalent and persuasive in causing patients to get checkups, compare and rank the several tools, incentives, and so forth in their reported effectiveness in producing checkups, compare results across demographics to determine which groups are best intervenable through these methods, then analyze the impact of these influences on patient ratings of the quality of healthcare services. The reason for that last item being to get on the radar screen of managements at organizations, it has to relate to something they pay attention to, which in this case are ratings. A little background on LA Care: we're mostly Medicaid, urban, two-thirds pediatric. Until June 2011 forward, California received an 1115 waiver from CMS to mainstream the fee-for-service Medicaid population into managed care. And so now we have two populations, moms and kids, and then a growing number of disabled members. The survey that I used for the question on incentives and reminders is the annual member satisfaction survey, which is CAHPS. CAHPS measures the quality of service by studying member opinions, and it's companion to another study, which is HEDIS. It covers the quality of care. So the incentives usually relate to getting people to visits that would be credited to the health plan under HEDIS. And so we were using CAHPS to figure out what's driving the HEDIS scores in well care visits. Underlying most every incentive program is the rational economic model, which assumes individuals act to balance costs against benefits in deciding what to do to their own advantage. And so the incentive attempts to alter the person's decision process to go get visits that they might not have been getting anyway. So a common strategy based on these assumptions is coupling incentives to techniques and insights. That the problem with incentives is often people deviate from rational choice. It works for some people, but it doesn't work across the board. So the rational economic model works up to a point, but organizations often have to couple other solutions. And so the focus of this presentation will be what do incentives do, and then what do you do when incentives don't exactly work. I'm obviously not going to read every word on the slides. In the upload has more detail, the PDF, but I'll cover the high points. The incentives and reminders use extrinsic motivations to supplement weak or missing intrinsic motivation in patients. So small gifts to patients, maybe movie tickets or a card to the card, $10, $20 incentive to the grocery store, or a gift card at a local store. And this is often used for adolescent populations to get them to visits that they don't see any need for. So these work for temporary short-term compliance, particularly something where a few visits have a lifetime effect. For example, prenatal care or well baby visits would be a logical use of incentives, where you get the payoff over a long time stream, even if the incentive disappears after that short period of time. The downsides to incentives are the behavior only lasts while the incentive is present. It's vulnerable to funding cuts, and we've often seen programs appear and then the funding evaporates. Then what do the members do? If people were already going for visits, what happens when the funding disappears? People who are already going on their own for intrinsic reasons, did we actually lower the performance over time by interrupting their natural motivation to go out of habit? So there are potential downsides to a pure incentive program. And under coming models like ACOs, for example, or into pay-for-performance for doctors, same logic for members, is that a sustainable model? The ideal should be to try to internalize the motivation, maybe get their attention with an incentive, but how do you couple that to something that then internalizes the behavior? And so incentives and reminders include persuasive forces, and programs to reduce restraining forces or barriers coupled together can maybe be a more successful strategy. And then some life event or the teaching moment that Elizabeth mentioned, looking for a life event where the member can connect the dots to say, okay, well, an incentive got them to the visit, but then the doctor uses that first visit to figure out what drives this person, what interests them about their health, or are they aware of their risks and so forth. Models of change, most incentives aim at increasing the desire of a person to go do the thing that we want them to do, which is get well care. Or reducing barriers is another strategy. So often people will pick one strategy and neglect the other. So incentives, if it's a pure incentive program, it doesn't look at the restraining forces, reasons why members aren't going on their own. And so it has an odd property, which I'll cover in the next slide. Problems are usually multifaceted, and so mixed solutions often work best. There are few silver bullets. The amount of the incentive to get the patient to figure out what their barriers are and to overcome those barriers would be an exceedingly high incentive program, might not even be allowed under regulations that we operate under as to how big the incentive can be. So if we look at only one facet and try to incentivize it with money, it often faces the knee of the curve, diminishing results over the life of that curve. And so if there are multiple facets driving the behavior or keeping people from visits, you want multiple solutions in play, because often one is starting to taper off, the other one is kicking in, and that gets the best result, having multiple solutions. So it's a process kind of like that. So improving patient adherence, this has to do with the patient activation model. Getting an activated patient is one who believes, getting the doctor to believe that the patient role is important and getting the member to believe their role is important in partner with the doctor, having the confidence and knowledge necessary to take action, then actually taking the action and then staying the course even under stress. So this tends to be a more holistic model than pure incentive where we take money and give either to the patient or to the doctor and expect them to solve the rest of the problem. Note that the first stage implies motivating, even activating the doctor, not just the patient, to recognize the necessity of engaging the patient as a partner in giving care and complying with guidelines. Patient activation versus conventional approaches. There are at least steps A through F: awareness of a possible positive outcome, desiring the outcome, perceiving its value as equivalent to the required effort, so it's worth it to them to go to the visit because they're going to notice a benefit. Knowledge of how to get the outcome, possessing the tools and skills required to perform those actions, possessing the resources required to take those actions, and then a belief that the reward will be received if the actions are taken. And this is standard motivation theory in the behavioral sciences. The problem with incentives is it obliges the patient to figure out the elements A through F on their own. Or if we're incentivizing doctors, it requires they figure out what the barriers for various patients are, and it varies by patient. For one, it might be a language barrier. For our population, about 16% of adults are parents of children say they don't take their children for well care visits because the doctor doesn't speak their language. So how big does the incentive have to be to get that parent to go to a visit where they can't communicate with the doctor meaningfully? So it's more than a movie ticket, or it's more than a $20 gift card, because going there costs them more than that. So a pure incentive program is inadequate. So it needs to be a coupling of barrier reduction and incentive. Getting into the data, we added a question to our annual CAP survey, and the question's worded here: reasons that caused a person to make or keep an appointment to visit the personal doctor for a checkup in the last 12 months. So there's a child version. CAPS is a survey administered, there's a child version of it from 0 to 17.99 age, and so the parent answers that questionnaire. For adults, it's ages 18 plus, and so there are always two components, and I'll report them both here. So what does it take, which of the following reasons caused people to go for a visit? And the majority case was the patient goes to the doctor annually as a habit. So a large number of patients are already going, which causes a little warning light to go off in my mind. That how much do we want to divert them from the behavior they're already doing at no cost? Do we want to distract them with an incentive? Problem with incentives being that you have to pay people who are already doing the right behavior for the right reason, and there's no real way to differentiate between the ones who need some sort of incentive. And so how do we give the incentive without interfering with those who are doing the right thing already? The next tier of responses were the welcome care reminder. So those were pretty common. People going because they got a reminder, or going because they got a call from a clinic or from the health plan. And then, sadly, a number that did not make an appointment at all within the last 12 months for any reason. And then after that, incentives are a pretty low percent. So I'm going to focus most of the remaining slides on the welcome and reminder calls, which seem to be the more noticeable to members, the bigger drivers. One reason for this is we did have an incentive program, but it kicked in at different times for different age slices. Ours is a complex network where we contract with approximately 37 large medical groups, about 70 total, and about 150 when we add in another 70 contracted entities such as clinics. It's pretty complex, any of which could be doing a call or an incentive program or some kind of gift or inducement to go for a visit. And we had no way of telling what incentives were in play for what age groups during what years of the survey. And so rather than try to figure that out in this stage of the research, we just asked the flat-out question, how many remember being offered an award? And it's a pretty low percent, so it isn't a big driver in this research. The next use of this question and the next analysis has to do with the gender. Are there any groups for which the reminders were more effective than others? The numbers here change a bit because the person had to have answers in all of the questions used in the analysis, so these numbers don't exactly match up with the same denominator across the set of slides. But so I'll take each topic one at a time. In this case, adult women were more likely than men to report seeking care as a habit and were slightly more responsive to reminders. One reason being, if they were making appointments, they're more likely to get a reminder card call from the clinic. So one answer may have driven the other, and these are multiple response options. So the main difference there was adult women. But on the parent side of the aisle, male children were more likely to have a parent making an appointment for an annual checkup. The next demographic that I analyzed was disabilities. We have SPD, or seniors, or people living with disabilities, versus the TANF, or non-disabled population. And again, a large number went on their own. But SPD adults and parents were slightly less prone than TANF members to credit reminders or incentives as reasons for getting checkups. Possibly they were already making their appointment, so the reminder really didn't change their mind. They were already going to get an appointment because of their illness or disability. They're naturally connected to healthcare more so than the TANF population. Adult SPD members were slightly more likely than TANF adults to report a habit of getting annual checkups, and that's kind of as expected for that population. The healthcare is a lifeline to them, whereas TANF, a person may connect with healthcare only when they're sick. Impact of incentive reminders. This has to do with the ratings members give for the health plan. So my goal in any of this research is to get some information in front of management as to what programs would help them help members get the care they need. And management often responds to how they're being evaluated by state agencies, by regulators, by CMS, by accrediting authorities like NCQA. In this case, CAHPS rates, the member rates the health plan, and then the next slide they rate their health care. And so we did detect a slight association. It's not a large association, but large enough to be on management's radar screen. And so there was a difference in the percent responding favorably in terms of the health plan rating. It seemed to be the case that if they got a reminder and it caused them to go for a visit, they tended to report higher satisfaction with the health plan. So if they use it, they like it. And given that linkage, it suggests that incentives would get a twofer, a way to both get better adherence to WellCare guidelines, members going for their visits, but also then they rate the health plan better. So there's a double reason for management to be interested, which is why I added this analysis. healthcare, similar sort of story. There's an association between the ratings that members give, the quality of the healthcare they're getting, and those who were influenced to go to get a visit based on a reminder call or a card. Finally, actionability, and that's the focus of any of the research I've presented at APHA. Designing interventions for evaluation, the lessons where mixed solutions work best. Barrier removal, so that, for instance, reminder calls, if they made an appointment and then forgot it, the reminder helps them get there. It removes, makes it easier for them to get there. Or providing interpreter services is another way we do barrier removal. Program evaluations are a barrier for us. We often launch programs to try to get people to visit, but the evaluation isn't designed in. It's kind of a lesson learned is we need control groups to be able to sort out which incentive or which program was doing what, had what effect, which are the most effective, which had the best return on investment in terms of getting better visit rates. Then lessons learned. The program evaluations realize considerable advantages when control groups are present. We can then pin what dollar went to the better, more effective program. Identifying contact mode, we did an interesting study on one type of call to get women's health tests, mammographies and so forth. And it's often surprising the programs. In this case, there was a high-touch program they were running, which was a live person calling and talking to the person about the necessity of getting these tests. And the other was robocalls. Okay, so which one was more effective, the one with the human being on the phone or one with just a recorded reminder? Surprisingly, it was the robocalls that were effective. They're much cheaper, and they were more effective. So that was a finding that the department could use immediately, the client department within the health plan. So it's worth doing the research or evaluation as to what worked. The curious part of that was that the temptation would be to say, okay, for all time, that's going to be the finding. Well, at one point of the curve, that's true, that for the easy-to-get cases, the robocall works. But then as you climb that curve and start tapering off on robocalls, then having the high-touch method on the shelf isn't a bad idea. So it requires testing at each stage. Which patients are we targeting with which technique? And then just a recap of what this covered in terms of the learning objectives. Incentives and reminder calls appear to be more salient persuaders than TV, radio, newspaper, and so forth. But the cause mentioned most often as was intrinsic, a habit the member already had of getting annual checkups. Maybe they just knew to give the right or politically correct answer there. But so I want in the next stage to try to link up to the actual visit data to see if their stated intentions on the survey were actually followed through. Then describing the practical logistics and costs, funding is a main vulnerability. If members expect an incentive or rely on a reminder, what happens if the funding runs out? So all efforts should point toward intrinsic motivations, the handoff to the doctor and the doctor praising the person for coming in and taking the teaching moments to emphasize why this care is good, what they screened for, what they found, the good news or the bad news. Then finally, describing proportions of Medicaid members who recall incentives and reminders. About a fifth of adult members and parents of child members recalled getting reminder calls and cards and recalling these as the reason why they got the checkup. Then comparing which sources were the most prevalent and persuasive. Calls were the most common and persuasive from doctors' offices in terms of getting people in for visits. The reminder calls were more common and persuasive in the recollection of members as reasons why they went to get appointments. So calls from the clinic were effective, and then reminder cards from the health plan were effective. So it seemed like kind of a tag team effort would have an additive effect. Then employers and media messages were a distant third tier. So there's no harm in using those methods, but it wouldn't put the main effort behind them. Then a recap of learning. Compare and rank several tools. The incentives were too infrequent to be reliably tested in these data. Calls from clinics were effective, as were cards from health plans. Then comparing the results by demographic, age, child. Children are more likely than adults to get checkups as a habit, so parents were more attentive. And then not all age groups got reminders and incentives, so that's a refinement I want to do later to find out from the Quality Improvement Department, do they know what other health plans we contract with are doing what, so I can analyze the individual effect of different incentive programs. Female patients were more responsive to reminders. Disabilities, the SPD adults were more likely to report getting annual checkups, but less prone to credit reminders as the reason for their visit. And then finally, the impact, as I mentioned, on ratings. There does appear to be a connection between the member getting a visit due to getting a touch point like a reminder or a call, and then the ratings of the health plan are increased as a result. So that gives management a reason to get behind an incentive program and perhaps give it stable funding. Appreciate your time.